mentioned going down in the initiation, and you talked about the earth. And Dwayne, that is really up for me these days. And I've been looking at something about choosing and looking at the soil, the actual physical dirt soil of my being. And where do I go psychologically or spiritually? Where do I go? And this goes to the work of Christopher Alexander, who you mention in the book, who did a wonderful book called Pattern Language. And he talks about how we're all in some ways pattern in this way of the very earth that we're born with or that we go to. And for me, it's my ancestral home. In fact, on my altar, I have a photograph of a tree and a rock in front of the tree where I used to sit as a child growing up on this actual land. And so I think it's really important what you're saying is that we go back to the soil of our being, both metaphorically and physically.
And literally, yes. Well, this speaks to me, Justine. I grew up on a farm. I've spent at least a dozen years doing nothing but farming with my father in Idaho. So I have a lot of experience with the earth. And one thing I've learned recently, though, has to do with the origin of the word human. Human has apparently origins in the word humus, which is the earth. And so the humus of the earth has grown into we as human. And so indeed, if we're going to make a journey home, to ourselves, we need to come home to our origins and to claim our residence with a living earth and a living universe. And so what you're speaking about, I think, is really central to what we're doing right now, coming home to the earth.
And I'm also thinking about, here we are in, if we use the metaphor in terms of computers, the need to reboot or install a new system of software to move from, let's say, competition and aggression and consumerism to cooperation, collaboration, and a paradigm of symbiosis or mutualism. And, you know, it's going back to the earth. That reminds me of tree. A tree lives in total symbiosis with so many systems. It's just amazing. I mean, the ground through the micro fungi, through the leaves and the seasons and the birds and the trunks and all of it. It's just right there. So what would you say about our need for that kind of mutual symbiosis?
Well, that Justine, speaks to me to the mature human on the earth. We are so endangered if we're looking at the prospect of functional extinction of the species, and we're in the process of killing off upwards of 50% of all life on the planet in the next 100 years. This is extraordinary what we're doing, and so symbiosis with the species is survival. It's not only survival in a material sense, it is recognizing the wounds in a spiritual sense. You know, Paul Ehrlich wrote a book on the population bomb and such. He's now been recently interested in the loss of species around the earth. And he said, he made this important comment. He said, there's an inherent sadness in our living on the earth right now because, quote, what we're losing is our only known living companions in the entire universe. We're losing our only known living companions in the entire universe. We're killing them off. Isn't that extraordinary? We're diminishing the web of life and the presence of life. What if we said, okay, well, let's kill one species off. Let's call it dogs. How many people have a dog? Well, there are about 8 billion dogs on the planet. Okay, wouldn't that be an enormous loss if you lost that one species out of hundreds of thousands? So we're not yet aware of what we're losing in the face of
Well,
progress.
we are in a bit of denial, more than a
Yeah.
bit, but you mention in your book there are seven uplifting forces. And I would like to begin to go into some of those uplifting forces, such as
Okay.
one is I was surprised that you chose this one, and I'd love for you to elaborate on it. You say choosing aliveness.
Yeah.
So, what does that mean for you?
Well, let's go back to conversation with Joseph Campbell, this the mythologist and historian and such, looking at the wisdom traditions around the world through generations and such. He was asked, he an interviewer said, "Well, look, isn't what people are looking for is more meaning in life? Isn't that what people want, meaning in life?" Campbell surprisingly said, "No. What people really want is the direct experience of being alive, the direct experience of being alive." Well, when does that happen? Well, maybe out there in the garden, maybe sailing a boat, maybe cooking a meal, maybe making love to your partner, maybe making music, maybe writing poetry. There are all kinds of ways people come alive, and it doesn't cost much at all. Now, so if what people really want is the direct experience of being alive, we can afford that. That's really, but if what people think they want is a big boat and a big vacation somewhere or whatever, well, we can't afford it. We don't have the resources on the planet to do that. So the key to our future is to see that it is the direct experience of aliveness itself that for mature people brings the greatest degree of satisfaction and the least harm to the earth.
And there's another quote that you use in the book besides Joseph Campbell, who you worked with, and of
Yeah.
course, listeners know we've interviewed him many times. This is with philosopher, theologian, and civil rights leader Howard Thurman, and you use this quote in the book: "Don't ask what the world needs; ask what makes you come alive, and go do it. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive."
That's
And
right.
in that way, you say it's not necessarily that you have to consume anything. It's like making a creative expression, or being of service to others. I mean, isn't that where, when we're with others in companionship and we're giving a caring gift to them, it just makes us feel so good.
Right. Well, you mentioned gifts. Each one of us has near gifts and true gifts. True gifts are things that we're really blessed to have. You know, we might be musicians, but have a difficult time finding a gig for our talents. But we might be poets, we might be painters, and so on.
Or even
Those could
gardeners.
gardeners. There you go. So our true gifts could be those kinds of things, but we're making a living often by our near gifts. Well, I sell real estate. No, I sell insurance or this or that. And it's making a living so you can go do what otherwise would just bring you alive, and that with your true gifts. So we're in transition, I'm hoping, to a society where people are giving their true gifts.
Yes, and that's this totally supported. I would like to go into also that one of the uplifting forces has to do with community. And I know that you have a lot of things to say about community. And one of the things that you talk about, something that's close to us, you talk about pocket neighborhoods.
Right.
One of the first things that really is close to each one of us. We all live in some sort of neighborhood. And what is a pocket neighborhood, and how can that support us in uplifting in this transition?
People are living in the suburban suburban regions where it's so difficult to connect with your neighbor. And a pocket neighborhood is simply a place where two or three homes, let's say, come together and say, look, let's tear down the fence. Let's create a community garden that embraces three households. Let's let the kids play. Let's let the dogs run around in the back or whatever. Let's cook meals on occasion together and so on and so on. And so it's a simple way to begin to restructure our lives in a more communal, collaborative, creative, cooperative way. So that would be a pocket neighbor that's at the very local level. And we can just then take that principle of design, of collaboration and community building and ecological restoration and all the rest, and just carry that right on up to co-housing communities, into transition towns, into with eco-villages, and then into a state like California and so on that says we're going to become an ecological state. Whole countries like China is saying we're going to become an ecological civilization. So this is something that scales from the very most local level all the way up to the planetary scale. It's out there in the zeitgeist of the mindset of our world right now.
There is, I've done an interview on, it's called Cool Cities Initiative, I think, and that's one of them. And Transition Cities, there's also a lot of information on that where people can really get to know our neighbors and support each other, share tools, share information, help one another.
That's right.
I mean, many people, they don't even know their neighbors, or if they live in an apartment building, they don't even know even their neighbor in the next apartment. So it's like saying, this is got to change. This does not uplift us. Living in isolation is not the choice we need to make in these days.
Right.
So I just want to emphasize that, and we'll talk more about some uplifting forces, including communication and internet, electronic town meetings and things. I'm here with Duane Elgin, and he is the author of the revised edition of Choosing Earth, Humanity's Journey of Initiation Through Breakdown and Collapse to a Mature Planetary Community. His website is DuaneElgin.com, and it has everything in there, including the Choosing Earth Project and all sorts of information and videos and podcasts, everything. So check it out, Duane Elgin, D-U-A-N-E. E-L-G-I-N, DuaneElgin.com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Towns. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Duane Elgin, and he is the author of many books, including the revised edition of Choosing Earth. You have added in your book like seven uplifting forces that we could choose. And one of those forces is communication. And I would love for you to talk about what is possible and what we should be aware of in communication technologies.
Great. Well, underlying this is a basic idea. When push comes to shove, and that's right now, we either talk or we fight. We either talk or we fight. And we're fighting right now. And this fighting is spreading around the earth. We better get up and get ready to talk our way into a more promising future. And I've been speaking about the shift from adolescence to adulthood, maturing, growing up. And certainly one expression of that is that we would talk to one another as a human family in this endangered time for the earth. And people say, well, yes, but how in the world can we talk together as a human family? And a revolution has been underway since the last 5 years that we're not really paying much attention to. And that is a revolution in terms of access to the internet around the world. And in 2018, for the first time, 50% of the people on the planet got access to the internet. Now, 5 years later, now that's gone from 50% to two-thirds, from half to two-thirds. And by the end of this decade, three-quarters of the people on the planet will have access to the internet. Now, whether or not governments allow them to use that access to tune into transformational voices, that's yet to be heard.
Well, there's something that you talk about, digital authoritarianism. Yeah. You give us a cautionary tale, like, all right, we may have access to the internet, and there's a caution there.
There is in that countries like China and Russia, to some extent India, other countries more in Asia, are tending towards authoritarian cultures that close off with a firewall the internet to outside countries and then control the access of people within the country to the information that they get. So that's what I call a digital dictatorship. And those are spreading around the world. And in the United States, that's impulse is spreading. So it's important not to just surrender the internet and the capacity for us to speak together as a human family to those who would want a digital dictatorship. So right now, two-thirds of the people on the planet could pick up their cell phone and with some degree of hope know that they're going to connect with perhaps a half the people on the planet if they wanted, and maybe more given the leaky nature of the internet to get alternative messages through. So if we are going to come to a place of collective understanding, mutual agreement as a species, even in the simplest terms, about we're on this planet together and we want to choose a pathway into the future that delivers a livable Earth here 50 or 100 years from now, well, we better start talking and we better start using every tool of communication that we have. And right now we have this revolutionary opening with the internet now available to two-thirds of the people on the planet. And if we can get through the governance issues of firewalls and such with a place like China, we can talk together meaningfully as a species right now.
I think with the internet, and especially with COVID, many of us in the last few years really started using places like Zoom meetings and other kinds of electronic meetings where we met together often. And even if we weren't together physically, we were together in many ways having very deep conversations. I know for me, I had several groups that I met with and continue to meet with about thoughts on racism and social justice. And so we've been meeting on regular basis, a diverse group of people regularly and deepening our relationship. There's also, I know where I live, there's upcoming, and I put it on my phone, there's a meeting that I want to attend. It's a Zoom meeting of our local supervisors or city council meeting. So I don't have to be there physically, but I can Zoom into it and my voice will be heard. You talk about these incredible internet ETM or electronic town meetings. So say something about that and how exciting that can be for our future.
Well, it's like your supervisor meeting, Justine, that now it's just commonplace. Of course, we can be a part of these gatherings, these meetings. 40 years ago, I started a movement for electronic town meetings in the San Francisco Bay Area. And we used television to give people programming in prime time and use the telephones to give feedback. And so we had a program, a prime time in the Bay Area. Electronic town meeting was seen by over 300,000 people in that hour. 300,000 people.
That was amazing.
And six votes came in from the scientific sample during the course of that hour. And by the end of the hour, and it was from the scientific sample, so you could trust who was giving feedback. By the end of the hour, it was clear that the people on the program itself in the studio had a mindset that was radically different from the people out in the world. And so we can, as a public, I think, trust the collective mindset of people much more than we can the opinionators, let's say, in a place like Washington, D.C. So I'm for democratizing the conversation of democracy for the entire earth, for our future. And we need it now, not a decade from now or 3 decades. We need to w be working on that now.
Well, that reminds me to ask you, what is your recommendation and advice of how we find trustworthy information? Because we are fed a lot of very untrustworthy, I would say, information or very skewed information. What's your best advice there?
Kelly, my best advice is look broadly, look wide. Don't trust any one particular source. At times, we'll open up dozens of websites from around the world, deliberately from India, from Ireland, from just around the world, and give me another point of view on this. So, first of all, other perspectives are really foundational. And then I think it's really important to just trust ourselves and not get enmeshed so deeply into all the conspiracy theories and all of the ins and outs and this and that, but stand back with reflective consciousness and look at this and just feel into this and say, okay, how much of this is really causing me traumatic stress and how much is actually serving me as a citizen of the democracy? So, it requires our maturity to be discerning going in and to look broadly as we gather that understanding as well, and then to look deeply. Are these short-term prognostications, or are there some larger perspective? We need perspective as we go into this transforming future.
And in doing that, Duane, it seems to me that it also helps us reflect on our own particular biases
You bet.
and our own particular, it might challenge our own particular belief systems. And that's a good thing
That is a
because.
really good thing. That's an important thing. And if we're going for our maturity and not just who's in, who's out as an adolescent, but we're going for our maturity, we want to be challenged. That welcome the challenge, bring it in, and learn from that.
I want to end our conversation today because it is a finite conversation, I'm sorry to say. And this is at the end of your book, somewhere near the end of your book. You do a quote from the person, the French person who wrote the book, The Little Prince, Antoine de Saint-Exupéry. And he said, I love this quote. He said, "If you want to build a ship, don't drum up people to collect wood or assign them the task of work, but rather teach them to long for the endless immensity of the sea." So, with that quote, what big vision can you share with us to help us join together creatively to see that endless immensity of the sea? What
Yeah.
would you have to say, Duane?
It came up earlier when we were talking about a living universe. And if we live in a living universe, the endless immense sea is the sea of aliveness that extends across billions of miles. We're embraced in a sea of aliveness that is beyond our current comprehension. And so what I would call, ask people is, let that call us into the future. We're learning to live in a living universe. And in living in that living universe, we're living in a new kind of domain of aliveness. New kinds of potentials are going to emerge. Live in that world of aliveness.
Oh, Duane, thank you so much for being with us today and showing, you know, giving us an overview, which is not easy to look at, but you've also given us an opportunity to see the possibilities of the future. Thank you so much. I've been speaking with Duane Elgin, and he is the author of the revised edition of Choosing Earth, Humanity's Journey of Initiation Through Breakdown and Collapse to a Mature Planetary Community. His website is DuaneElgin.com. He spells his name DuaneElgin, DuaneElgin.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3800.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over four decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org, or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hello, I'm Mark Matusik, author of Lessons from an American Stoic. Next time on New Dimensions, I'm going to be talking about how the wisdom of Ralph Waldo Emerson can change your life.